Please listen carefully.
And now, live from a commandeered radio tower in Nunya Business, Texas, it's the Assuming Positions Podcast, featuring two guys stuck in the back half of a two-person horse costume, Kevin and Mikey.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Assuming Positions Podcast. Kevin over here.
And Mikey over here.
And today on the podcast, we are doing another reassumption.
Dun, dun, dun.
Reassumptions are when we go back and find an old movie that we think we may have liked to see if it still holds up.
Yeah, yeah.
And today we are reassuming 1996's entry into the fantasy action world, Dragonheart.
Dragonheart! Bum, bum, bum.
Dragonheart. So, Mikey, what's Dragonheart?
Dragonheart, if we're going to get right into it, is a movie I remember seeing in the theater when I was a preteen, early teen. But Dragonheart, like you're saying, is 1996, directed by Robert Cohen, a bunch of writers behind it. But it essentially is Dennis Quaid befriending a dragon voiced by Sean Connery, and shenanigans ensue. Yes. I don't know if you want to call it a D&D party, a sort of like one-shot sort of D&D party group, but that's essentially what Dragonheart the movie is. It's really just a tale of a one-shot D&D group sort of, oh, you have a dragon in your party and we're going to fix it now and here's all the shenanigans that ensue.
Yeah, I guess so. I'd almost call it a fairy tale.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, stars Dennis Quaid, David Thewlis, Pete Postlethwaite, the great Pete Postlethwaite.
Yes.
Dina Meyer, Julie Christie, and of course, Sean Connery, the late, great, rest in peace, Sean Connery.
Yes.
So where do we begin?
Do you have any history with this movie? This is a reassumption. So this is going off the assumption that we've seen this movie before. We've encountered it somewhere in our childhood or teens, but we're coming back to it. So what's the first time you remember seeing this movie?
It came out in 96. I was in college at the time. I'm sure I probably just went to see it because I was in art school and we were nerds. And there's this dragon movie out and nerdy stuff wasn't as prominent as it is nowadays. So whenever stuff like that came out, you kind of grabbed at it. So I'm sure I bombed down there with friends or maybe my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time. I don't remember, but I know I saw it in the theaters when it was out.
Oh, same. This was, like I was saying, I was probably 13, maybe 12, but this was prime movie going. If it has a dragon in the movie, I'm probably going to see it. So, yeah, I'm on board.
That age seems like it might have been the perfect age for this movie, frankly.
I had pewter dragons. I had the whole collection. I was prime wheelhouse for this movie. Yes.
Yes. So this movie is billed as a fantasy action adventure. I don't know. I'd almost call it a fantasy action comedy, sort of. I don't know. There's a little bit of this, and we'll get into it as we kind of go through. We'll go through the points of it. We're going to spoil this old movie.
Yep.
Just to get to the talking points of it that we have in our notes. And, well, right off the top, I have to say that this movie isn't 100% sure of what it wants to be. I would say that right up to the top, it seems to me that it was one thing that might have been edited down to another thing.
I could see that. Yeah, yeah.
It seemed like it might have been a little more serious slightly, but might have been edited down a little bit to make it more family friendly. Not for like an R to a PG-13 thing. I think it was probably always going to be a PG-13 thing, but
yep.
You know, there's some things that look like they were going to go somewhere and they just didn't. And we'll get to that when we get there.
but this is like you're saying, this is like a Knight's Tale, or it's pre Lord of the Rings. It's pre Game of Thrones. It's pre all the fantasy sort of tropes that we have now as sort of a default. But we've talked about A Knight's Tale. This is in that realm of 90s movies that touched a little bit on fantasy D&D sort of realms, but only dipped a toe into it. It's not really, it's not really hardcore.
Yeah, this is a very 90s family action movie. I mean, it falls in with Like, it has shades of the Zorro movies with Antonio Banderas in it.
Mm-hmm.
It has shades of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves in it.
Yes.
It's all that. It's shades of, like, Young Guns. All the, like, period action adventure things that were PG-13 that they were making in the 90s. It slots right in there with all those.
Exactly, yes.
It is very of its time. And if you like any of those movies, I think you'll probably be fine with this movie because it's the same kind of feeling. I get the same kind of feeling through the whole thing.
Yes, I'm with you. Yep. But we start off, this is one of those movies that doesn't really explain things outright, but you sort of get the gist of it as you're going along. And so the first act, the first exposition is that you have Aonin, who will become the king at some point, but he's being trained by Dennis Quaid the Knight, who is teaching him the code of the old ways, the old code, like the Knight's Code, which I guess you're supposed to assume is King Arthur and stuff like that. But
yeah.
Dennis Quaid is the Knight's Knight. He's teaching the old ways. He's like our epitome. He's our hero. We get that from the start.
Yeah, Sir Bowen is training the younger version of Einon, who is at this point is not David Thewlis.
Yep.
But they're sword fighting on these old ruins with wooden swords, and this is the classic scene of let's show how good Sir Bowen is with the sword, that he's like one-handed pouring himself some water or wine or whatever that was while he's still fighting him. And then taking a drink. And it's pretty good stage combat. There's one thing about this movie. I think the stage combat's pretty good through the whole thing.
Oh, the combat's great. But there is an aspect of it that it's a little bit like, is this a Princess Bride? Are we like, is this a page from a book that we've already seen before? But for me, it was a little bit cheesy. It was like, oh, they're fighting with old wooden swords and he's pouring drinks while he's fighting them. So it's kind of hilarious.
Yeah, that's supposed to be silly. That's where it's like, is this... You kind of are like, oh, is this a comedy? Yeah, but it's not outright a comedy either. So it's amusing. And so this is where I'm going to harp on this for the whole thing, because this is my A number one nitpick with the whole movie. And it starts off pretty much at the beginning.
Okay.
Well, I would say it's probably in the second scene. It's fairly soon. So he's training this prince in the old code with sword fighting and stuff. And then when they're leaving the training, Sir Brock.
Yes.
Who's that character actor that plays Sir Brock?
Oh, he's in all the Rambos and like,
yeah,
all the Predators. He's one of those character actors that has a familiar tough guy face, but Brock is Brian Thompson.
Yeah, that's okay. If that tells anyone, so he's straight up one of those character actors who, when you see his face, you'll be like, oh, that guy.
Yep.
He's a very that guy character actor, usually in tough roles like these. So he's like Sir Brock, the tough knight, the no nonsense.
Always with it. Fun. Yeah. Always has an unhappy face, always has the frown. Yep. I know.
Right.
Yep. I'm with you.
And he's like, the peasants are revolting. And he's like, the peasants were always revolting. Now they're rebelling. See, it's like, haha. Oh, this is supposed to be funny, right? So they go running off. And then we see the prince's dad, the king, and all his knights trying to suppress a village rebellion. And the villagers actually get one up on the king and corner him and pull him off the horse and beat him to death.
Yeah, the rebellion actually goes right. I mean, right. if that's all that's going on for kingdoms and fiefdoms is that, oh, the peasants are rebelling. Yeah, that's stereotypical sort of trope for what's going wrong.
And then that's when you go, wait, this isn't funny right now.
Are we supposed to be laughing? Is this a comedy bit? Nope. This is actually happening. The king is being taken down by a peasant.
Yes. And young Einon goes running over there to rescue his father, but gets there too late and basically takes the crown off of his head as he's dying.
Yep.
And I'm king now. Hooray for me.
Hooray for me. But also, oh, there's this fired-haired girl that's going to stab me in the middle of the rebellion and also cause conflict. What is happening? Oh, no.
Yeah, it's kind of an accidental stabbing. She kind of falls out of a building and knocks him into a spiky bit on one of the sides of the houses or whatever.
True, but that also, this sets the tone of the rest of this movie, is that things sort of happen by circumstance or just like, this is what's happening now. And so at the beginning of the movie, we have Dennis Quaid and his squire, and he's teaching him the old ways and all that stuff. But then his father is dead, and he gets stabbed by this random peasant during a rebellion and needs help.
Yes. They take him to the queen, who takes him to the... He's mortally wounded in the heart, the prince is. So they take him to the queen, and she's like, he's done for, but for one way. And this is where they take him to the cave of the dragon. And this is basically it. This is where the whole point of the movie. This is why it's called Dragonheart, right?
I didn't realize it until we were watching it this time. But yeah, this is where the title comes from. This is Dragonheart. We encounter a dragon through voiceover, thanks to the wonderful Sean Connery. But we encounter a dragon through voiceover that helps this prince by giving him half his heart. It's Dragonheart. I didn't realize until watching it this time.
This is so... He gives the prince half his heart on the, as long as he swears he's going to be a just leader, unlike his tyrannical father.
Yes.
And the queen says, you can trust my boy. He's been taught in the old ways by Sir Bowen over here. And the dying words of the prince are, I swear. And he's given the heart. And then he comes back to life. And hooray. And this is where the problem I was talking about earlier comes up. By this scene, Dennis Quaid has done enough dialogue that you're like, what's your voice, Dennis Quaid? Are you Scottish, Irish? Are you English? Are you from the Midwest? Are you from the South? Are you Beetlejuice? A lot of times he sounded like Beetlejuice.
Hey, we shop the same Kmart. Let's go. Yeah. No, I got you.
Especially when he was talking to the... After he talks to the dragon, one of the cool things that happened is he gives the dragon his sword to swear upon or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he pulls the sword out of the dragon's claws, and the dragon makes like a scratch down the sword. And that scratch is there throughout the whole movie, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. But when he tells the dragon, you have my sword for doing this for my squire, it just sounds like he's like, you have my sword. So I go, hey, it's like, I don't know. I can't do a Beetlejuice, but he sounded like Beetlejuice.
And I get it. Like, Dennis Quaid is putting on an act. Like, they did give him a ridiculous wig. That long hair doesn't suit him at all. But just in general, in the abstract, I do buy Dennis Quaid as sort of the old school Game of Thrones. Like, I live by the code, I die by the code. I believe that as an actor, but it seems to be sort of lost in this whole production. Like, Dennis Quaid is trying really hard to deliver this performance, but it's kind of not really fitting in the rest of the world of it. I don't know.
Well, I believe a lot of people in doing research, a lot of people think he was miscast. I think they originally wanted Liam Neeson for it.
Okay, I can see that. Yeah,
I think it would have been worse, actually. No, seriously, the way this movie was. But I have no problem with Dennis Quaid in that role. I have a problem with Dennis Quaid doing like a Robin Hood Prince of Thieves Costner thing where it's like, do you have an accent or not? So it's, you walk this line, and I know some people get upset either way, but once you put a dragon in it that can take part of its heart out and put it, you've gone into full fantasy world.
Yes.
So you might as well not bother. If you can't do an accent properly, just talk the way you talk and be from another, you know, be from another country.
I get it.
You know what I mean? That people just have American accents over there.
Yeah, at this point, we don't know if Dennis Quaid is Scottish, English, or Wisconsin, like you're saying. Yeah,
no, yeah, I'm with it's all over the place. It's all over the place. They must have not given him an accent coach or whatever, because he goes from his normal voice to like a gruff voice to accented sometimes to, and it depends whether he's yelling or not or whether he's talking quiet. Just, that was the thing that bothered me the most. Throughout this film. Otherwise, like, I was sitting there going like, I would not have the time, or I wouldn't want to do this. But if there's any super nerds of Dragonheart out there, let's do an ADR voiceover of him with some like other person and see how it turns out. See if it's better.
I get it.
See if that fixes everything.
Who would you have be Dennis Quaid's voice, though? Because you're going up against Sean Connery, which is, as far as voiceover actors go, Sean Connery is sort of up there. So, I don't know.
Right. No, you just need to have a... I think they were trying to direct him to be kind of gruff and grizzled.
Yeah.
And so he was trying to do gruff and grizzled, which he can do in his American voice. But I think he was also trying to put British on it, and it just wasn't happening. So you get, I don't know, who's a British actor who's has a gruff and grizzled voice?
I'm blanking. All I can think about is Simon Pegg, but that's kind of silly in this role. So
anyway, whoever that is.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the whole setup of the movie. This prince has a dragon heart in him. And then now that he's alive, the big thing he's going to do is he's going to rebuild that old Roman castle that he was training with Sir Bowen at.
Yep.
And then Sir Brock is like, that's going to take a lot of people. And then next thing we know, he's like enslaved all the rebellious peasants to rebuild it. And Sir Bowen's like, what the heck is going on? This isn't you. You don't enslave people. And he's like, it's that dragon heart. You've been bewitched by it. He goes, I'm going to go kill all the dragons now.
Yeah, because apparently the piece of the dragon has corrupted him, and not that, oh, maybe the Aenon is like just another, he's a son of his father. He's going to be exactly like him. Nope. He's just going to try and rebuild the castle and abuse peasants and get away with it. But it's the dragon heart that has cursed him.
That's what Sir Bowen thinks. So he goes and becomes, 12 years later we skip to, and Sir Bowen is the most successful dragon hunter of them all, apparently.
Of all the dragons that we haven't seen, because I think we only see one dragon in this entire movie. But yes, Sir Bowen is the dragon hunter of all of them.
Yes, we see the shadow of one of the ones.
Oh, that's true.
The second, we find out the second to last dragon in existence. But, man, this is like when we get the introduction of the great brother Gilbert of Glockenspur.
Much like I love Chaucer in the movie A Knight's Tale, played by Paul Bettany, we get the classic actor, the character actor, the B-list actor, however you want to phrase it, but R.I.P. Pete Postlethwaite as the poet. Yes. He's the best character in this movie.
He's the best character in this movie, the poet monk, and it's just because it's Pete Postlethwaite. And I've never seen him turn in a bad performance.
Not at all. Like, in The Usual Suspects and Romeo and Juliet, he's yes. One of those guys like, oh, I know that face, and I'm going to like this movie because this guy's in it. Absolutely.
Yes. So this is where we get, Sir Bowen kills the slays, I guess, because we want to use the word slays the dragon. He slays this dragon, and Brother Gilbert witnesses it and then wants to like follow him and write poems and tales of his exploits.
Yes.
So he follows him to his hunt for the next dragon, who turns out to be the dragon of the movie, the Sean Connery dragon. And we get this fun little George of the Jungle. Like, he tries the bolo. He has like all this cool equipment on his horse,
mm-hmm.
like this bolo catapult thing.
Oh, that, yeah, in the saddlebags and all that. Yep.
Yeah, that catches the dragon, but then pulls the saddle hole off the horse because it's a big and powerful dragon. And we get him going George of the Jungle through the forest.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. That's our first interaction between Dennis Quaid and who we now know as Sean Connery as the main dragon of this movie. But this is what sort of brings them together, is that they're both the last of their kind and they're hunting after each other. And I guess circumstances just dictate that, oh, these two people are forced together and they have to team up, kind of.
Yeah, the dragon says, I'm the last dragon, and if you kill me, you're out of a job. So let's come up with a mutual beneficial plan. So one of the things that I think I've seen this movie more than three or times, because that whole scene where he's in the dragon's mouth with the sword aimed at his brain from the roof of his mouth,
yep.
That's like sticks in my brain really hard. I really remember that scene a lot. I don't know why I thought it was so cool. I like some of the humor hits me right. Like when there's like a piece of a knight stuck in his between his teeth, and he pulls it out and he sees the ring on his finger and he's like, oh, this was Sir whoever, you know?
And the dragon's like, oh, thank you. That arm has been stuck in my teeth for months, so thank you for clearing that up. It's like, what's going on here? Because meanwhile, Dennis Quaid is sitting with his sword stuck in the roof of the dragon's mouth, and like, I think there's two shots of it. Like, they show him in the daytime and then they cut back to it at nighttime, be like, they're still stuck here. You know, at an impasse, Dennis Quaid is sitting in this dragon's mouth, and the dragon's like, okay, you can sit here, but we're going to work this out. It's like, what?
Yeah. So the dragon proposes that they go into business together and do mock dragon slaying.
Yeah, like, I guess I have to put my first sort of complaint in here, but This is what throws these two main characters together. We have the main dragon of the movie and the main knight of the movie. And the fact that they're together is they both need money. Like, we're the last of our kind, so I'm going to pretend to slay you to get money from the villages, and then I won't kill you because you're the last dragon, and okay, I guess we're all good with this. Here we go.
Well, yeah, because, well, I mean, I don't think it's that much of a stretch for Sir Bone to agree with it. I mean, the dragon's just trying to stay alive. That's his point. He's trying not to get slain.
True.
And Sir Bone does need cash because he's estranged now. He doesn't have a kingdom anymore because he kind of slightly roughed up the king before he left when he was angry at him, saying, "What are you doing to these peasants?"
So yeah.
He's kind of a man without a country. So he sees the dragon's point. If I kill him, what am I going to do now? I don't have any source of income.
That's true, but we're going against the established sort of knight's code that Sir Bowen lived by, is that a knight is only as good as his word. And so now he's going around the country saying lies, saying, "I'll take care of this dragon for you." Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you know.
Yeah, but I think he kind of threw away the knight's code because he thought it didn't work because of what happened to the king.
It's true. He got tainted by a dragon, so his yeah. ways are no good. What is he to do?
I think there's a lot of this. The story isn't very thick, but there's plenty of room to kind of add to it here and there to make stuff work.
Yes.
That's why I said it kind of feels like it was edited down a little bit.
I could see
like
that.
It feels like there was more story there that isn't. So it's almost like a Cliff Notes version of what the actual story is in a lot of ways.
Especially because, like, I would say most of the comedic effect for this movie comes between the interactions between Dennis Quaid, Sir Bowen, and Sean Connery as the dragon. Like, they have conversations with one another. They're teamed up to sort of do this part of the scheme, but they're like joking with each other and they're taunting each other and they're sort of at odds with one another, but they're still teamed up. Are we supposed to be silly in this moment or is this serious? I have a hard time. It's a toss up for me.
Yeah. So they go off to start this scheme off, and this is where we start getting the first of two introductions of soon to be big players in the Harry Potter world.
I know who you're talking about. Yes.
Yes. So the first character who's being mock terrorized by the dragon is Sir Felton, who's played by Jason Isaacs, who everyone knows as Lucius Malfoy.
Malfoy, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
But this is one of his earlier movie roles, actually.
Before Harry Potter, yep.
Yeah, way before Harry Potter. And he plays that character great. He's like kind of a snivelly, snively. A lot of those performances turned in this movie, I think, kind of elevated above itself because there are some really good actors in here.
Mm-hmm.
Like Pete Postlethwaite is awesome. And then I think that Jason Isaacs turns in a good Felton. He's kind of snivelly, scheming, greedy. He does it really good. The characters are generally pretty broad. Like I said, this seems like it's kind of a kid's movie in a lot of ways.
Gotcha.
Or was made to be a kid's movie if it wasn't originally, which I don't know if it was originally. I think that's what we might be seeing with some of the cutting down that was done.
Maybe. Yeah, yeah.
So they do the mock thing with Felton, and then we immediately get introduced to the 12-year-older king now, King Einon, who's played by David Theluis, who we know as Remus Lupin from Harry Potter.
Lupin from Harry Potter. Yeah, the werewolf. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I think that David Theluis is really good in this. I don't know how you feel overall, but he's like a creepy psychopath, basically. He's not playing it all that broad, really. As Jason Isaacs is playing, his is really broad, almost like a pantomime villain, like mustache twirly, like classic.
Yeah, he's just a minion to a bad guy. Yeah, I got you.
But David Theluis really plays him as like this psychopath, like, kind of creepy. I mean, he comes across, and this is why it's like, is this a kid's movie? Because he comes across to me, and depending on how you wanted to edit this, he comes across to me as something from like a thriller or something. You know what I mean?
I get it.
I'm not going to elevate to Silence of the Lambs or whatever, but you know what I'm saying? Like that style of like oh, this guy seems like he's kind of a wuss, and he seems like he's kind of mild-mannered or, you know, not much of a threat, but mm-hmm. actually he's like a creepy psychopath.
He takes after his father. This is where I will input one of my complaints, is that David Thewlis, like, is a great actor, does a great job. He plays the sniveling sort of prince become king perfectly. Like, that is the bad guy that you want. But in this movie, it seems like he's the bad guy specifically because he wants to bring back his dad's castle. Like, he wants to rebuild ruins. He wants to exploit peasants. But it seems like he's being a jerk just to be a jerk. There's not, like, he's not avenging his father. He's not, I mean, he has a dragon heart in him. I mean, come on. Like, he should be a good guy, but despite having the dragon heart in him, he still comes across as a jerk. So I guess props to him for being a jerk, but I don't really see it in this movie. It's like, what are you doing? What's happening?
I guess. I don't know. The things you said there, I think, are kind of there in context. I think the fact that he used the rebels to build his castle was getting vengeance for his father.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was suppressing them even harder to get vengeance for his father. Because his whole thing is that he didn't want to kill anyone because he thought that was too much of a release. He even mentions it.
Yeah, death is a release, not a punishment sort of thing. Yeah.
Exactly. So he'd rather basically torture and torment.
But it comes to fruition. This is, I guess, good Hollywood movie making, but it comes to fruition that the people he's torturing and sort of putting through the paces happens to be Kara's father. We'll get to Kara in a minute, but it happens to be Kara's.
Yeah, you can get to her right now.
Okay, so
that's on my notes, is right now.
Okay, so Kara is the redhead girl that stabbed him in the beginning of the movie, and it turns out that Prince Aenon, now the king, is messing with her father. Like, he's putting down the peasant rebellion, so he's doing everything a good lordship should do, a good king should do in rebuilding his castle, but he happens to be picking on Kara's father and just peasants that aren't falling in line, and he's burning out their eyes, and he's like he's shooting arrows at them. He's not cutting out their heads, but he's still picking on them. And it's just like, come on, man, really? You're going to be that much of a jerk?
He's a jerk. He's evil. He's a creepy psycho. And all us, Kara in this, played by Dina Meyer, look, throughout the whole thing, I'm like, oh, it's the girl from Brave. She looks just like Merida from Brave.
Oh, right? Absolutely. Yeah. For me, I was just like, oh, this is what, I guess they couldn't get Carrie Russell from Starship Troopers. Like, that should have been the person that was in this role, but they found another sort of female actor that could fill that space and be her.
I think Dina Meyer is in Starship Troopers.
Is she really? Because, like, she looks straight up like Carrie Russell to me, so.
I think she's in Starship Troopers.
Maybe that's on me. We'll have to check IMDb real quick.
Dina Meyer.
Oh, she is in Starship Troopers. Holy shit. Okay, so she is in Starship Troopers. We just looked it up, and I believe that. But when I think Starship Troopers, I think Carrie Russell, and they're sort of synonymous in the same sort of role aspect. I don't know.
Well, maybe that's why she's in Starship Troopers. I'm. Was she in the first one? I don't even know. I just know she was in one of them.
She has a listing for the first Starship Troopers, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Maybe that's what you're thinking of.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. But Dina Meyer is sort of the, do we call it the antagonist of this movie? Because she seems to show up every time there's a conflict. Like, she's the reason for her father rebelling against the new castle going up. She's the one that stabbed Aeonin, like, when he first got the dragon heart. And she shows up again just to defend her father, to be like, hey, I represent the peasants and we're not going to stand for this, even though you're being a jerk of a king kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, she's definitely causing problems. The next time we see her is in the banquet hall. She's trying to kill the king again.
Jumping through the window.
Herself, yeah. But then she's captured. And then we get this like creepy Game of Thrones scene that seemed like it was way edited down. This was the biggest part.
Okay.
Of the movie that I was like, I think there was more here. And they're like, no, this is supposed to be a family movie for kids. Yeah, punch up the funny stuff and tone this stuff down a little bit.
Yeah, I got you.
Because it looked like it was going somewhere. Like, he literally was like, oh, I'm going to, because it was so Game of Thronesy. It was like, he has her captured. And then he's like, I remember you. you were that girl who pushed me into the thing and gave me this wound.
Yeah.
And it's like, come with me. And he's like, it looks like he's getting to take advantage of her in a very bad Game of Thronesy way.
Mm-hmm.
But then it just suddenly turns into, hey, you know what? You should be my, I was confused by this part. Hey, you know what? You should be my queen and I can give you everything. And, you know, and it was creepy and it was psycho-y and I got it, but just the way it was edited, it seemed like if this was a more serious movie and it was more kind of Game of Thronesy, witchery, like the stuff we know now.
Yes.
And the way that David Thewlis is playing it, which was nice and creepy and like psychopathic and like really thinking he could convince this woman who just tried to kill him to be his queen.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like it was going to a point where it was going to be like, he was just going to, we'll just use the word take her. But then he just like leaves the room.
Because apparently he controls her, or I don't know. Yeah, he just leaves the room.
It didn't come across as, and of course she's trying to, it's tying into a scene where she's trying to defend him off and stabs him in the shoulder. And the dragon is over talking to Sir Bowen.
Yeah, that's right.
Eating. Yeah. And then the dragon feels the stab wound in his shoulder.
Because they have this, they both have the same pain. They share the same heart. Yeah.
Yeah, so we're seeing that happening, which, okay, that's fine. That's interesting. But it seemed like it was going somewhere dark and then just kind of petered out. Like, he was playing it so, I think he was playing it well, and he was a victim of it being edited or whatever. It was very strange to me. That whole scene was strange. It was menacing, and he was coming across as creepy, and it was like, ew, he seemed so slimy and gross, and I was getting shades of King Joffrey and all this. Yes. Kind of like just this whole, just a whole Lannister. It was going somewhere, and then he was just basically like, yeah, so think about it. I'm out of here. You know, it was like, what just happened?
I'm with you. Like, he is, David Thewlis is an ultimate bad guy. He is the ultimate bad king, and he sort of cops out on all his jerk decisions, all his sort of dark inspired actions, because this is a family movie. Because at the same time we have Aenon sort of taking over Kara, we have Sir Bowen and Draco sort of bonding and like having quips with the dragon, and they're realizing that they're the last of each kind, but they go to each of these sort of different fiefdoms, I guess it's different peasants, and they overtake them, but they're all sort of the same kingdom. I don't know what it is, but they're like,
yeah, hey. it's as far as I could tell, it's all Aenon's kingdom, and it's all the lords are all those different sirs.
Yep.
The first one that they took advantage of was Malfoy's area.
Yes.
Was Felton. And the second one they went to was Sir Brock's. That was Sir Brock's village.
Oh, okay.
And but, that's where Kara was from.
But in going to these different villages, like, I guess we're supposed to believe that they're part of the same kingdom, that,
yeah,
you know, that Aenon is overseeing all of them. But these are like different tribes. Like, one of them is chanting about meat, 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 meat.
Oh,
meat.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that. Oh, okay. We'll get to that.
Okay, so, sorry.
So Kara is released by the queen. The queen knows that she messed up by keeping her son alive.
Yes.
And so she's rescued by the queen after he left her. It really seems like it would have made more sense. I don't know who did it. If he's sitting there trying to take advantage of her and he gets interrupted somehow by the queen saying like, oh, they need you down at the something, something's happening. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then she sneaks her out.
But to be fair to the queen, she's the one that, like, that's the whole reason that the dragon has given her Prince the Heart. Like, she's the one that knows the old ways, knows the old code, and is trying to live by this ancient medieval system that is sort of out of fashion now. But
yeah,
the queen, much like Dennis Quaid and Sir Bowen, are the last holdouts of this, like, true system. So it is the queen that saves her, but there's sliding stone doors, like... They didn't have that in medieval times, like trapdoors and little mechanisms. That I get that she helps Kara escape, but come on, trapdoors on like hinges and mechanisms.
Well, they didn't have dragons either.
Oh, true.
So, I mean, once I, like I said, once you put dragons in there, you can do whatever you want. I think part of the problem is that, like one of my kids said, and I guess we, when I watched this a year ago or whatever with them before, and I forgot I had said this, is part of the problem with the movie is that they put a blah, blah, blah AD in front of it saying, like, this is the time that exists in our time.
Yes.
When they should have just left it as, like, this is in a different world. Like, you know, Game of Thrones is in a different world. Witcher is in a different world. So you get to make your own rules.
I get
it. So if it was in a different world, you wouldn't be saying that, because you don't say that stuff about Game of Thrones. You're not like, oh, that Dragonfire screen stuff, whatever that stuff is called. They didn't have that back then. You've never said that about Game of Thrones, right?
And to be fair, like, we'll talk about the dragon now, but Draco, Sean Connery as the dragon, is great. Like, his voice is wonderful. When I think of a dragon's voice, I kind of think of Sean Connery. So to have him portray the dragon is a dream come true. Like, 13-year-old me loved it. It's like, oh, yeah, exactly how a dragon should sound. But also, it's sort of sci-fi channel, history channel, CGI. And you get to see him as the dragon in the background on the green screen. But he never really interacts with Dennis Quaid. So, I don't know.
Well, it's 1996. What do you expect?
Here's what I expect. We're 3 years out. Jurassic Park came out in 1993, right?
Right.
Jurassic Park, wonderful. Practical effects. This movie takes a little bit of a failing with me because it's a whole bunch of CGI. Like, I love the dragon. I love the way he looks. I love that he's sort of based on a dinosaur sort of exoskeleton.
He is. He's actually based off of the T-Rex from Jurassic Park, because ILM did him too.
Oh, what? Okay. So I'm learning that now. But that was one thing I had going back and viewing this now in the current setting, is that the CGI leaves a little bit to be imagined.
Well, I thought it was pretty good, frankly. I'm going to have to disagree with you. No, I thought it was pretty good. The problem with this movie is that a lot of it was shot in daylight, and that was hard on CGI back then. Still is hard now, I think. But
yeah, yeah.
It was very hard back then. The stuff that's in the darker stuff is a lot better, I would say. I've recently rewatched some Lord of the Rings stuff, and some of the stuff with Gollum is just as bad as stuff in this.
Oh, I believe really. It. Yeah.
And that was a lot later. So I was pretty forgiving for what I thought. It was pretty good. And if you look at the direct to DVD sequels of this movie, it's way better. But I don't, just as a technology, you might reconsider if you look into it, because this was the first time ILM ever used the mouth movement thing. The first time they ever used it to match up Sean Connery's mouth to what the dragon was saying, was the first time they ever did that. So,
but you're also saying that ILM was responsible for some of the CGI for this movie?
They did it. Yeah, it was ILM.
Oh, okay. I'm on board with that, as much as I might want to poo-poo it, but it's cool that ILM was behind the actual, like, Sean Connery dragon. So,
but it might have been better. Yes, it might have been better if they did a little mix, because they did go full CGI on this, except for, I think, when he was in the mouth of the dragon. And originally, I guess this movie was 5 years before it already existed, and they were working with the creature shop of Jim Henson and actually made a full-size dragon puppet to be using for it. But then they just... I don't know. They decided it was going to be too much or something. But there is, if you look online, there is test footage out there of the puppet dragon.
And we do get to see some sort of examples of that. There are some scenes where Dennis Quaid is, like, pinned down by a dragon hand, and they actually use, like, a practical dragon hand.
Yeah.
And, like, all the explosions, all the sword fighting.
Oh,
Like, all that's all practical, but it is sort of when we get Dennis Quaid talking with Sean Connery is when we get the sort of voiceover CGI effect. And it's like, I get it. I'm along with this story, but we're sort of copping out a little bit, at least to me. I don't know.
All right. Well, I thought it was pretty good. Then, like, as we said, the next village they go to is Sir Brock's. The only reason I know that is because he literally, when he comes to the village, he's like, who's the lord of your village? And they're like, Sir Brock lives 6 miles in a fancy house up the road. He's not here.
It's that character actor from that one movie. He's over the hill. Yeah.
So that's Kara's village. That's where he meets her. She's getting, like, hit with fruit or whatever, because she just came back and she's like, we need to rebel against, he tried to take advantage of me. We need to rebel against this king. He's everything my father said, but worse. And they're like, let's throw fruit at her.
That's the old peasant mentality. It's like, we don't agree with you, so we're going to throw lettuce and tomatoes at you. So here you go. Vaudeville style. Pow, pow.
So they don't have any money to give him, but then someone's like, no, I think for some reason Sir Bowen's like he's thrown out the old code. And it does come out later that he has to reclaim it. But there's like triplet daughters there. And he's like, well, maybe one of your daughters will be a good enough payment. And they're like, oh, a dragon sacrifice? We know who to do it. This girl we've been pelting with food over here. So so they put Kira on a stake and roll her out on a wagon. And the dragon comes and takes her away. And Bowen's like, that's not part of the plan. And then he finds the dragon and Kara like having a nice conversation, and the dragon's singing and being charming. And he's like, what's going on? This isn't part of the plan. That whole scene was pretty good, I thought.
No, I agree. It does tie into like the dragon's just hanging around to sort of have conversations with Dennis Quaid or Kara or whoever is around. Like, I guess he's just bored and he wants to have conversations with people. I don't know.
That's what happens when you live for hundreds of thousands of years or whatever, I guess.
And you're the last of your kind. I get it.
Yeah. And this is where we have the cool river fight between Bowen and Einon, the king.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool. Again, the stage combat in this is great.
Especially because this river fight is sort of a callback to what we saw in Act 1 of Einon and Bowen have been fighting. Like, they've been training for this. But now we get to see, like, it's 12 years later, and now Einon is now Loomis Reapin from Harry Potter, and he's got a whole bunch of extra strength.
Yeah, and this is it's good because when they're fighting, they do flesh out a little bit. This whole scene from the dragon talking to Kara to the fight, Bowen and Einon saying, you betrayed me, no, you betrayed me.
Yes.
You know, there's actual some good character development here. Whatever was happening in this set of scenes, I don't think it was edited down that much. I think that this was the bones of the whole thing. That why when I say I think there was stuff that was cut down, I think that this part of this is part that wasn't cut down at all. So we're seeing the full potential of what this could have been.
Okay.
I think, personally. It has a lot of this very much. This is where it comes into its 90s action adventure, Mask of Zorro, Robin Hood, you know, Young Guns type feeling thing, you know, where it's not too heavy, but it's interesting, and they each feel they betrayed each other, and the king is now I'm the master type thing. You almost got a Jedi thing happening here, a Sith thing, you know, because they've both gone evil in their own ways.
Oh, absolutely. And this happens in the first act, too, but this happens in this river fight, especially, is that King Einon is in the Luke Skywalker sort of pure white, like you think he's the good guy. And then Sir Bowen, Dennis Quaid, is in the black and you think he's the bad guy. But this is where we start to get the hints that we had the scene where Prince Einon gets stabbed in the shoulder and it affects the dragon. But this is where we start to see that him and the dragon are connected, so there's an actual force behind it, and we get the little bit of a comeuppance in that, like, the old ways, the old code, that is what's legit. Dennis Quaid is the one that should prevail because he's the good guy. He's been living by the code his whole life, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's basically where he starts to realize what he's done wrong, is because he realizes now that King Einon tells him, I was never following that code.
Never.
And so that's when Sir Bowen realizes it has nothing to do with the dragon heart. It has everything to do with the code. And that's why he lost his way, because he stopped following the code. So
yeah,
like you said, the code is everything.
Yeah. It wasn't the dragon heart that tainted him. He just happened to put the dragon heart into a big jerk. Who doesn't, curse you, David Thwellen. Like, I know you're playing a bad guy, but you're a bad guy through and through. You had a dragon heart in you and you still went to be a jerk. I mean, come on now.
Yeah.
You should be good.
So, but King Einon gets the best of Sir Bowen, but he's, of course, bailed out by the dragon who comes out through the waterfall once again. And then they're taken away to a scene that is like, why is this here? What is going on? Who are these people? And what is wrong with the costume and prop department right now? Oh. I do not know what happened. Because so far, all the costuming and all the props and everything have been fine.
Yeah.
There's nothing that stood out to me. All the stuff, it seems a little bit fantastical, but not crazy fantastical. And, you know, I'm sure if you're super into medieval stuff, you could nitpick all these kind of things. But it was, like, fine for fantasy, like Ren Faire stuff. Everything's just, nothing stuck out to me.
Mm-hmm.
But then they go to this weird world where everyone's living in, like, wigwams. And and they're going to pull another one of these. See, they're going to pull another one of these scams where we're going to fake kill the dragon again. And it's like, after your meeting with the king, haven't you changed what's going on with all this? I don't know. But anyway, these guys that they're with, so they give him the gold and a pig head. And they're like, we can't lose any more pigs.
Yes.
But they have like these weapons that look like orc weapons from like Warhammer Fantasy.
And battle axes and all that type of stuff, yeah.
But they're all weird looking. They look so impractical. And everyone seems like got a screw loose or something. Like, they all seem like they're morons or something. But I don't know if they're supposed to be, like, barbaric. I don't know if they're supposed to be, like, orcs or something like that. But they're just dressed like the peasants in the other towns. But they have weird weapons. And then,
yes,
like you said, at one point, so the whole joke is that this is another part that's supposed to be funny, is that Kira shows up and she's like, he's a fraud. He's in league with the dragon. And they're like, that's ridiculous. And Brother Gilbert shows back up and he's like, no, he's not. He's the greatest dragon slayer ever.
I've seen it all before, and I notated it in my poet's journal, but I forgot to write it down. But it's still true. Yeah.
And then here comes the dragon and he shoots him with the thing and he fakes the arrow going into, or the bolt going into his arm.
You're supposed to sink down farther. Yes.
Yeah, he falls into the water, but the water is only like waist deep. So he's like, are you going to sink? And it's pretty funny, but it seems like it should have happened earlier in the movie before his fight with the king. And also, I don't know what's up with these extras and the fact that they're just like meat. Like, what the heck is going on? What is wrong with these people? They look like every other villager we've ever seen, except they have weird impractical weapons and they're acting like they're cannibals or morons or something's going on. It was so weird to me. I was like, what's happening right now? Did the costuming and prop department not, I don't know. It would have made sense if they were like orcs or some kind of like creature, or even if just not that, just like full on barbarian them out, make them just look like Mad Max post-apocalyptic peoples, but they just look like the villagers from the other village.
I'm with you. No, like, that is exactly what happens, is they have these sort of battle axes and they have this sort of meat chant, and they should seem like they are a tribe of peasants that are somehow like on the outskirts of the kingdom, like away from everything. But based on the story we're told so far, this is just another fiefdom of the peasants that are rebelling and uprising against King Aenon. But like, they're intense. They're screaming for meat. As soon as the dragon goes down, they're like, oh, let's get the dragon. Let's get it for meat. And then the dragon comes back to life and they're like, oh, let's go after Dennis Quaid. Let's get his meat. And he comes back to life and we're like, okay, let's go after Kara and get her meat. It's like, you guys are crazy. What is happening? Like, I get that you're part of a fiefdom that's under control by King Aenon, but are you really this crazy?
I know they had a herd of pigs with them. So they had meat there.
They did.
And they looked like every other peasant except for the wacky weapons that they had.
True.
So I don't understand. I think someone really messed up here. I think they were supposed to look like dirty, barbaric peoples or something, and they just didn't.
They were supposed to be like the last holdouts or the last sort of outskirts of, like, these are the most desperate peasants. Like, they're screaming for meat, so I guess they're the most formidable? I don't know.
They didn't come across that way at all. Weird. That scene was not, I don't know.
But this is where the dragon does get kept under wraps. This is where Dennis Quaid, his whole scam gets figured out, mainly because of Kara, but also because King Aenon kind of knows what's going on. So this is how we get to our third act, is that, oh, you're the last dragon hunter, but it's sort of a scam and we figured it out. So we're going to take your dragon and we're going to cause hardship for the rest of the world.
Yeah, well, I mean, the final battle in the third act come on like real quick after this. It's like I said, stuff seems like it was edited around funny and mixed around kind of funny.
Yep.
But Kara goes back to the village again. They're like, I thought we fed you to a dragon, but here you are again bothering me about wanting to rebel. The eye patch guy. Yeah. Right. And then Sir Bowen shoots an arrow into his wooden shovel and he's like, hey, I'm going to go ahead and start a fight with the king because I found my old code back. Because he had like a come to Arthur, I guess.
Because we were at Avalon, the sacred place of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. Yes.
Right. They flew over to King Arthur's castle after the weird barbarian, whatever they were supposed to be. And Kara says, I'm going to go take him out. And the dragon's like, yeah, we have to go take him out. And Brother Gilbert's like, sure, I'll go with her, I guess. And Bowen's like, no, I'm not going to do it. And then King Arthur comes and talks to him from the dead, I guess. And is like, you forgot the old ways. And let's do it. So he shows back up and he's like, here I am. I found the old ways. We're going to go take the king out. And there we go. Off we go. We get a little training montage of the peasants.
Yes.
And we get Sir Brock coming over the hill while he's falconing, going like, oh, the peasants are training to, oh, that's not good at all.
It looks like they're preparing. Oh, no, I better go warn the king.
Yes. So that happens. And then.
But that was such a cool scene, like the last final uprising for the peasants. I know it's sort of montage-y and like, oh, we're going to train these peasants to fight and they know how to fight. Like, I get that. There is sort of, you have to stretch your imagination to believe it's true, but the peasants do get the final uprising. Like, they trap them in the forest and they surround them with fire. It's a whole bunch of good practical effects. It's great.
Yeah. The final battle is great. I really liked Sir Bowen's cool shield that he had his, well, I don't know where he got it, but he had that dragon shield that looked like the head of the dragon on it. That was really cool looking.
Yep.
And we had Kara doing her two-handed axe wielding. That was pretty awesome looking.
Splitting them like a pudding, yeah.
Yeah, she doesn't need any help. He went over to help her, but she didn't need any help. Yeah, I like the whole final battle thing. But there was the thing in there. Here's another silly costuming and weapons thing in the middle of this. Mm-hmm. Was the queen brought her own dragon slayers or whatever from like some foreign land because they had some weird language. And they had the most impractical armor and weapons I've ever seen in my life. It was just like, what is going on here? They were so silly compared to everything else we'd seen in the movie, which was a level that was like, sure, it might have been impractical. Sure, it might have not been real armor they had back then. Yeah, yeah, I know Amped Guard guys and the SCA. I know. Yes, yes, yes. We understand. But this is a fantasy movie. There's a dragon in it. So, but there is a level that you get to where you're like, what is this? It looked like DLC from some like crazy video game or something, the horn, like five horns on their helmet and just weapons that just were so impractical and stuff.
It looked like DLC, like you're saying, it looked straight out of the game Skyrim, like the whole, like Dragonborn, like, oh yeah, we know some dragon hunters. Let's just bring them from this video game and bring them in here with their horn helmets and their weird shields. Yeah.
It didn't fit at all.
Like, okay, these guys just show up and I guess, because the only experience we have in this movie of dragon hunters is Dennis Quaid. So we know he's a good guy. So apparently his competition must be like armored up and ready to go for dragon. It's so weird.
Yeah, it was weird. But I mean, the idea of them was cool because the queen had hired them to kill the dragon so her son would die because she wanted the...
She knows the secret all along. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, she knows the secret all along. She wanted to make up for her error, her mistake. And then we get like the, again, the hidden Game of Thrones scene where the dragon slayers catch the dragon because Brother Gilbert shoots the, in the battle we're talking about in the forest, Brother Gilbert shoots the king with an arrow in the heart.
Yes.
Which causes the dragon who is attacking the castle to fall into the castle. So the dragon slayers, hunters, whoever they are able to chain Draco the dragon up. His name's Draco, by the way. We had a whole splash scene that we kind of skipped where he's like, my name's unpronounceable by you.
So instead of calling him dragon in English, he calls him Draco, the Latin word for dragon. But yeah.
Which Sean Connery points out, which is kind of funny.
Oh, there's so many meta commentaries in their little conversations between Draco and Sir Bowen. Oh, I love it.
So he's chained up there and the queen goes down there to stab Draco in the heart and the king catches her. I guess she'd be the queen mother at this point, or the king's mother, or I don't know what she'd be called. Anyway,
yep.
He catches her and he's like, oh, I see you hired the dragon slayers because you know that if he dies, I die. And then she walks through a black archway and he walks in it and you hear like, oh. And it's like, oh, I think he just killed his mom. But, uh-oh. You know,
yep.
We can't show it because family movie.
Because family movie, yep.
And then everything, that was a weird thing that happened in the final battle. And that wasn't weird. It was just interesting. Family movie. But here's one weird thing. I want to see if you pick this up too.
Okay.
I was watching it with my family. We're like, what just happened there? So Kira's like sneaking into the castle because they're all sneaking in the castle because they realize that they have to free the dragon or help the dragon or whatever. So Kira's sneaking around and she gets caught by Malfoy.
Mm-hmm.
And then Malfoy gets stabbed in the back, you know, at the last minute. And it's the patch guy who saved her, the guy she's been trying to convince to rebel.
Mm-hmm.
And they look at each other and they kind of like do this weird like shoulder, like they kind of like just touch each other gingerly. It was a very strange like either hug or high five or whatever.
Nope, we're on the same mission, so we're going to touch shoulders and that's it. Like we know
it was weird though. It was awkward. Did you see it? Did you feel that? If not, after go back and look at it. It was so weird because it was just so awkward. It was almost like it seemed like two teenagers who were kind of attracted to each other and they had to like hug at like some event, but they weren't sure if they wanted to. It was weird.
And I'm with you. Like, that character's name is Hugh, which we don't learn until the third act of this movie. But Hugh only shows up with his eye patch self, like, in certain key scenes. And so when he does show up, you're like, oh, okay, I guess he represents all peasants. So if Kara's okay with him, then I guess the audience is okay with him. But
yeah.
All they do is sort of, like, that shoulder sort of embrace, like, it's okay. Like, we're on the right goal. We're doing the right thing. So let's keep on keeping on.
It was weird. It was awkward. Anyway, then Kara gets to take out Brock, who was the, you know, the lord of her village. So her suppressor, which
yes.
would have meant more if you really know it's if they'd really established that hard, but they didn't.
They didn't.
Again,
yep.
It's kind of shallow. I mean, it's there. The whole like all the bones of the story are there. That's why I said it seems like this has been edited down or is the Cliff Notes version.
Yeah, because all the undertones are there, all the sort of Game of Thrones intrigue that you would sort of imagine or put behind as sort of the undercurrent or the explanation for all this. It's all there. They just never really say it outright. So
yeah.
I'm with you.
But then we get to the final showdown, the final King Aenon versus Sir Bowen.
Yeah, the student versus the master. What's going to happen?
Which is, again, awesome stage combat. I thought it was great.
It's the old Robin Hood. It's the old sort of King Arthur, Knights of the Round Table. I mean, it's a sword fight to figure out the fate of the universe. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. But, of course, Sir Bowen, the person we've been rallying around for this entire movie, is the victor. He comes out ahead because he's the one true knight. He lives by the code. Of course he's got to be right.
But he's not, because that's when we find out when he goes... The king falls off a building or a tower, not a building. He falls off the tower and it's like, well, he's dead. That was it.
Yep.
So Sir Bowen goes down to help Draco out. And Draco's like, he's not dead because unless I'm dead, he won't die. He was right. He's invulnerable, basically, which, again, rules of the world not truly established. If you cut off his head, does it grow? What is it? You know, is it a Deadpool thing? I mean, what happens?
As far as like final moments for a bad guy to go out on, King Aenon sort of just falling off the turret or the tower is kind of lackluster. Like, I get it. Like, he loses his footing. They're having a sword fight. But, oh, he just fell off the tower. So I guess that's the end of him. But
it wasn't, of course.
Yeah, no. Draco let us know that he's still alive because the dragon heart that beats in him still beats in Draco.
But again, this is a family movie. This is a kids movie. He falls through a roof and into water. Whereas if you wanted to be harder, you'd have him fall and like almost replicate his original wound where he like falls into something spiky.
Yeah, exactly.
But then he has like, then he like pulls himself off because he's, you know, be something more graphic and cool. But nope, family movie. He falls in the water.
True.
And then of course we get the, hey, I'm going to lift up my scales. Here's my heart. You have to kill me or else he's going to be alive still. And he's like, I can't do that. And then, of course, here comes the king. See, I'm alive.
Dun, dun, dun.
And here's Kira, and I'm going to grab her and make her a damsel again. And then what's weird is here's the part that, like, I'm like, you need to explain your lore a little better. Because he has Kara by sword point, the king does.
Yes.
And then Draco hurts his arm on the shackles. He's shackled to the ground. He hurts his arms on the shackle. And then the king's like, oh, my arm. And what's weird is we never saw it go that way before. It always went the other way.
Yeah, if the king got hurt, the dragon got hurt, but we never saw the dragon sort of controlling the king, yeah.
Right, and if it went that way, then it seems like all the other... there's plenty of times we saw the dragon get hurt, and the king wasn't like, ow. You know what I mean?
No, I'm with you.
Like, when the dragon... in that first scene with the fight, when the dragon is George of the Jungling Dennis Quaid through the forest, and mm-hmm. Dennis Quaid gets it caught between two trees, like a tree fork, and the dragon crashes hard, wherever the king was, he should have been like, oh, gosh. You know what I mean?
In the middle of the banquet hall, just should have gone down face first. Absolutely, yeah.
You're like, what? Are you okay, sire? I mean.
I think a dragon has fallen in the woods somewhere.
I mean, for the past 12 years, would he like randomly get hurt and not know what happened?
If what we're shown in this movie is to be true, then that's what should have happened. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, weird. I spent the past 12 years of my life randomly hurting myself and not knowing why. Because, I mean, the dragon, he said he was constantly fighting dragon slayers.
Exactly. Or
so he had to have been getting wounded.
Getting wounded, or if at least he's the dragon eating sheep, the king should have been like, do you taste mutton? Like, like, what's going on?
That's pretty good.
That's how it should have been, but we only get a hint at that in the final, like this final battle in the third act. It is a little too late, but it does make sense. I get it.
Yeah. But of course, here comes King Aenon charging towards Sir Bowen, and he has to make the decision. And of course, they do the Hollywood. He's good. He's throwing the axe, but which one is he throwing it at?
Oh, no.
And of course, he does the quote unquote right thing and kills the dragon.
Because he lives by the code. And so a dragon has to die. Dun, dun, dun.
So that kills the king and it kills the dragon. And then his spirit ascends into the stars.
And that's really like the resolution of this movie is that, okay, the king's dead, the dragon's dead. And now we have a new constellation and everybody's happy. Hooray.
Yes. The end. And then we get a kind of a voiceover from Brother Gilbert saying, yes, like, Kara and Sir Bowen ruled happily ever after. Those were great days. The end, right? It's like a fairy tale.
It is. It's a perfect three-act play. Like, it's resolved. We have the conflict in the first act, and it's resolved in the third act. Easy peasy. One and done.
And what's funny, so a few little notes before we get to our pizza rating. The theme song of this, the To the Stars theme song, has been used a million other places. When you hear that theme song and you think you've heard it before, you have.
It gets used
in trailers all the time.
It sounds familiar. Yeah, yeah.
They've used it countless times for walk-ups in the Oscars.
Okay.
And stuff, because it's called To the Stars. Get it?
To the Hollywood. Yeah, I do get it.
But if you look up the Mulan trailer for the original Mulan, it's used in the Mulan trailer.
Oh, fun. Okay.
So that's just a fun point. And also, they made three sequels to the movie about the last dragon with dragons in it. So
they made three of them? Wait, I thought there was only... I knew there was a sequel, like a direct sequel. There's a Dragonheart 2, but they made four of them total?
Yes, there's four movies.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The other ones are all direct to DVD. I haven't seen them. The direct sequel in 2000 has the older brother from Malcolm in the Middle in it. And the CGI is worse looking than the CGI from 4 years before because it's direct to DVD.
Yep.
And it's kind of funny. I guess I was looking this up. They reuse a lot of stuff from the movie, like where the dragon's flying around and setting stuff on fire and stuff. And they just took out Draco and put in this other new dragon.
Oh, no. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And there's like kung fu in it and stuff. Go seek out the trailer. It looks like a Nickelodeon movie or something.
If they're adding in kung fu with dragons, I'm kind of on board, but direct to DVD sequel, that puts me a little bit off. So it's a toss up, but I hear you.
Yeah. So anyway, who knew? All right. So pizza rating. Mikey and I like to do a thing we call the pizza rating.
Yes.
Out of 8 slices of pizza, 8 being the best because it's a whole entire pizza, we decide how many slices of this movie we'll eat. We can add toppings, take away toppings to kind of goose up the rating a little bit. So, Mikey, out of 8 slices of pizza, as your reassumption, tell us what you think you would have given it when you first saw it, and then tell us what you give it now.
Okay, so when I first saw it, like I said, my first experience with this movie was when I was 12, 13 in the movie theater. So I was the perfect audience for this. This was right in my wheelhouse. I collected pewter dragon statues. I was big into D&D, so they put out a movie that had a dragon in it. And I'm like, okay, I'm on board. Let's go. So 13-year-old me probably would have given this 8 out of 8 slices just to, like, it's fantasy, it's D&D, we got dragons, there's a noble story behind it, they got the King Arthur old code in it, so I'm all on board. But going back to it and going through it now, the rose glasses came off a little bit, the CGI does look like something off of the Sci-Fi Channel, something off the History Channel that you would have seen in, like, Farscape or Babylon 5. Like, it works, but it doesn't really hold up. You can tell it's 90s CGI. So with that, the quippy dialogue, I have some problems with when Dennis Quaid and the dragon are hanging out and they're just sort of joking around with each other. That I get that there's some humor in this movie, but it comes at odd moments. So long story short, I give this 6 out of 8 slices. Plain cheese. That's it.
6 out of 8 plain cheese.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So let's see. I'm not sure what I would have given at the time. I'm sure I liked it, and I'm sure it was probably higher. I probably would have given it a 7 out of 8, maybe, or I don't think it would have bothered me that much. I think a lot of the rose coloring coming off our glasses comes from the fact that they've done so much good fantasy stuff in the interim period.
Very true.
I mean,
yes.
We were able to get Lord of the Rings and, you know, Game of Thrones and Witcher and things that are just so well done.
Exactly.
That it's hard. But I always try to look at the stuff in the era that it's in. So I am actually probably, I definitely couldn't stand that accent. That takes a slice away. And the costuming stuff and that whole meat thing was ridiculous to me. But overall, I mean, I'm waffling between 5 or 6 slices. I like your 6 plain cheese, but do I want to walk through the problems? Okay, I'm gonna go ahead. I'm gonna give this movie. I like this movie though, so I'm gonna go with you. I'm gonna go 6 out of 8 plain cheese.
Okay,
I was gonna say 5 out of 8 with meat on it, but 6 out of 8 plain cheese is the same thing, I think. So, because I'd watch this movie again, basically. That's the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I would watch it again. It's fun enough. It's not like I want to direct rotation.
I got you.
I think it's something that, like, if it was on TV, I would stop and watch it because it's fun. It's fun. That's the whole thing. It's fun. This is a fairy tale. This is a sit down in front of the fire and tell me a story.
Absolutely.
Type story.
Yeah.
So, and it's fine as that. And would I like it to be goosed up a little bit to find out what the deeper elements? Could this movie be redone? Yes. This is a perfect movie. Like, when we talk about remakes and stuff, and like, why are they remaking this movie? You don't remake Red Dawn. We went over this. This is dumb. But if you want to talk about a remakeable movie that you could actually improve upon,
yes,
and maybe and really do it well, this is something that I think could be done.
Especially so. Because we've had the Lord of the Rings, we've had the Game of Thrones, we've had the Witcher, like you're saying, like we have the tools to make a good fantasy story right now, and I think Dragonheart as a story does fit that sort of excellent one-shot tale.
Right, right. The bones are excellent. You have a tyrannical father whose son gets mortally wounded, and a dragon gives him half his heart, hoping that he becomes a righteous ruler over the lands, but it doesn't turn out that way, and the knight who is training him feels betrayed, so goes on to slay dragons, but then finds out that it wasn't the dragons that did it. It was actually just because he wasn't following the code, and then comes back and joins forces with the dragon to undo the wrong that was done. That is a great story. The elevator pitch of that story is great.
Absolutely.
So the execution was a little wonky. So
a little 90s for me. Yeah.
Yeah. A little 90s. So, all right. 6 out of 8 plain cheese for both of us, or 5 out of 8 with topping, 2 toppings, same thing. That's how our pizza rating is. It's very, if you want something precise, you come to the wrong podcast.
No, I get it. Here's my question for you, though. I have not seen any of the sequels. Have you seen any of them?
No, not at all. I mean, I only found out about them doing research in this because when I Googled Dragonheart, I got movies that weren't this movie.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, what the heck is that? There's like Dragonheart, what, Vengeance? I don't know.
Vengeance
what the heck they
and
were.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. I was like, what the heck are these movies? So that's the only reason I know they existed.
Okay. Well,
and then I wanted to see what the direct sequel was because he was supposed to be the last dragon. So I looked it up, and apparently Sir Bowen goes back into the dragon's cave and finds some eggs.
Oh,
there,
okay.
And then gives them to Brother Gilbert, and he puts them down in the monastery basement. And then this kid finds a dragon down there. It seems like it's How You Train Your Dragon, basically.
And that makes complete sense based on the story we've been served with the first movie. Like, it's this sort of, here's our tale and here's how it's going along. So I get that, but that's kind of loose threads for me.
Yeah, I don't know. Just I think you'd be better served just watching this one again.
If only to hear Sean Connery as the dragon, because he's right. Like a Smaug. It's classic Tolkien. He sounds so great as a dragon. But yes.
All right. So let us know, is Dragonheart one of your favorite movies ever? Please, if you want to send us an angry letter, we loved it. We loved getting the Knight's Tale angry letter. That was great.
Yes.
Because I think I gave that 6 out of 8 as well. So if it's one of your favorite movies ever, let us know. Tell us why we're wrong, or tell us why we're right. If you hate it even more than we do, we want to know that too. You can send us a Gmail at assumingpositions@gmail.com.
Yes.
We can also hit us up on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. We're on Instagram most, at assumingpod, on all those things. And we want to thank you guys so much for listening. And we also want to thank that guy, Brad, for doing our announcing, Not Scott Productions for our equipment, Jazzar for our music. And we hope you guys have a great day. And we hope you're warm out there and you survived the snowpocalypse that we just went through.
Yes. And if you're not, then huddle up with your dragon named Draco and hope that he has the voice of Sean Connery and he protects you with his wing.
And he can breathe fire when he wants to, even though at one point in the movie he should have just breathed fire all over the king and they didn't. He just looked at him. But anyway.
Oh, Dragonheart!
Do, 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 do.